All right. Thank you so much. I was asked to speak about being the peanut butter, navigating the sandwich generation. So I just want to give a little bit of background to the topic, and it really comes from just the very nature of life, because when we can talk about the sandwich generation, the sandwich itself is constantly changing. And some people find themselves as a single adult, a child, and then we make a transition to a single adult, and then many of us get married, and then we have children, and then we have grandchildren. And in every single situation that we find ourselves in the course of going through life, we always find ourselves presented with a lot of conflicting needs, conflicting responsibilities, and conflicting interests, and we're always forced to prioritize. So the nature of the sandwich is always going to be determined by our matziv, our particular situation in life. I just will provide a little bit of background for something that I saw in the nature of transitions, because sometimes the transitions are joyous and happy, and sometimes the transitions can be difficult and challenging. And I saw something very recently from Reb Chaim Volozhin in his commentary on Perkei Avos, where he brought in a beautiful, beautiful explanation of the 23rd Psalm, Mizmor LaDavid, Hashem Roi Lo Achsa, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And in one of the lines in the 23rd Psalm, at the very beginning, says that he makes me to lie down in green pastures, he leads me by the still waters. You know, it says, Binos Deshi Abitseni Almei Menuchus Yenahaleni. And Reb Chaim Volozhin explains that Hashem is our shepherd. And sometimes we find ourselves in situations that we don't want to be in. And they're very, very difficult. We have challenges that we don't really enjoy, and issues and things that we have to struggle with that we wish we didn't have to struggle with. And the lesson is, Hashem's our shepherd, and Binos Deshi Arbitseni. You know, stay put. He's put you in this situation, and this is a verdant pasture. And we may not see its fertility. We may not see how it can be nurturing. We may not see its benefit immediately. But if we engage the issues, and we struggle with the issues, and embrace the issues, then we can find that we can grow tremendously from that engagement. And it is a Binos Deshi. It is a verdant field, and it's something that can enrich our lives. On the other hand, sometimes we find ourselves that we're very comfortable where we are, and we're very happy, and then there's a change, and then there's something different that occurs, and we don't like it, and we don't want the change. We want things to be, we've gotten into a routine, we're comfortable, we're happy, and then something happens. And we resist it, and on that point, David HaMelech tells us, "Almei menuchus nahaleni." It's time to grow. The Ribbono Shel'olam is bringing us to a new place, because we need to be in that new place to complete ourselves. So life is a series of challenges and changes. Life is a series of finding the verdant pasture that we're in. Life is a series of meeting new challenges, and this is really the backdrop to any conversation about the sandwich generation. The other issue about the sandwich generation is the very name sandwich. I was thinking about this, that a sandwich is a nice thing, right? So if you're in a sandwich, a sandwich is a coherent whole, a useful entity. It's tasty, it serves a function. A sandwich is great. So if someone happens to be the peanut butter in the sandwich, so that's very chashuv, that's wonderful. I'm the peanut butter in a sandwich, right? So if we can model our lives that we are in fact a sandwich generation, We've succeeded because sandwiches are wonderful. More often than not, or frequently, the model is not one of a sandwich. A sandwich is great. The model is one of sometimes feeling like one is being drawn and quartered, right? Torn apart, right? That is not the model of a sandwich. In other words, again, we have conflicting needs, we have conflicting responsibilities, we have conflicting issues, we're trying to go ahead and address all the issues, all the people, all the things that are going on in our life, and we're torn asunder by all the things that we have to do. And that is not a sandwich. That is just torn apart. So in some sense, what I would like to do is help, and the focus of the talk is to try and determine how we can move from a paradigm of being torn asunder by all of our conflicting needs and responsibilities, and in fact, transitioning to something that, for purposes of this talk at least, is a sandwich, which is a good thing. A sandwich is nice, it's coherent, it's orderly. How do we move from being torn apart to making a sandwich? So let's look at some of the issues involved. And again, I want to give a little bit of background, which I think are sort of essential tools. And then I want to get into specifics. And I suppose I should state my qualifications up front. And the only qualifications I think I have is that I'm a human being, and thank God I've been happily married for more than 32 years, and we've been blessed with six children and many grandchildren. Also, in our lives now, we are in a situation now where we have. Thank God, three of our four parents are alive, and they all live in immediate proximity to us, and they are all in their 90s. And so there are amongst our parents, they are, my mother, Kanaina Hora, is 96. My wife's parents are both 91. And as we deal with this stage of life, we deal with significant health issues and issues of maybe decline in terms of physical capabilities, in terms of executive function, in terms of memory, in terms of just being able to care for oneself. And so the issue that we are dealing with is taking care of our parents and at the same time maintaining a healthy relationship with our children, but albeit our children at this point in life are essentially all out of the house. And so in terms of the immediate issues of do I have to do carpool or do I need to go to the drugstore to pick up medicine for my mother, we're not necessarily dealing with that. But we are dealing with other issues that and other responsibilities that we all deal with. And some of the things that comprise these conflicting needs are, for example, things related to individual development and individual growth, whether that is time spent alone, which is involved in learning Torah or going to Shirim or people may have other outlets and needs, and hiking and music and art or friends or socialization, things that speak to sort of restore and refreshing activities that are very important. And then many of us have to deal with parnassa. We have to deal with making a living, and sometimes the needs of parnassa can really be a professional of those of us who are have a profession are concerned about our career development and our advancement in our profession, our development in our profession. But sometimes it's not a question of professional career development. It's simply a matter of making ends meet. And it's just going ahead and making sure that we have the income we need. Some people have to work two jobs to go ahead and make their ends meet. Some people work three jobs. These jobs, these responsibilities take time and therefore represent another major activity that could be a source of conflict. And then we have, besides the individual growth and parnassa, we have communal, what I will call communal obligations. The men among us have a responsibility of attending minyan every day, and sometimes if someone has a chiyuv to say kaddish, right, that represents a major responsibility that can affect a person's ability to work or other things that a person is doing. Sometimes people get involved, as they should, in other communal activities like Chevra Kedisha or Bikur Cholim or doing Chesed. And those are also very, very important things. And people are encouraged, and Chazal say many, many things about the importance of doing that. So that's also very important. And then we have family, right? And these are not listed in order of priority deliberately. They're not even listed in alphabetical order. They're just listed, right? We have family. And then within family, so that's a major block of time, a major block of energy, a major block of concentration. And within family, it's not a homogeneous unit. Family is divided into the familial components, all of which have and require responsibilities and attention. There is a spouse, right? Many of us fortunate to be married. There's a spouse, and there's the achrayus, there's the responsibility of maintaining a healthy and happy relationship. And so therefore, our spouses and our marriages require input and require work. There are children. Children, you know, depending on the ages of the children, they have to be bathed, fed, cared for, transported, right? And then when children get older, they have to be monitored, they have to be guided, they have to be structured. And then when they get older, right, you have to figure out how to accommodate your responsibility to marry children and how to stop being sort of the same parent that we were when the children were, you know, 10 years old, and now the children are 18 years old. Now the children are 25 years old, and the dynamics are beginning to change. And how do we deal with those relationships? And then, of course, there's siblings and other familiar responsibilities. So all of these things represent potentially conflicting needs because it's not possible. There's a certain mutual exclusivity associated with this. It's really not possible to, for example, be doing your job and functioning in some sort of capacity, getting paid to do a job, and at the same time that you're being paid to do a job, attending to the needs of a child or attending to the needs of parents, right? And that's the other familial responsibility. So we are all, you know, torn and can be torn asunder by all these different needs. And as I said, how do we make the transition from being what I would call drawn and quartered, you know, pulled apart, to being, you know, a coherent, lovely model of a sandwich, right? How? What can we do? So again, I want to bring a sort of a strategic approach and then transition from strategic approaches to a tactical approach, more immediate. Strategic approach is that one can think of a symphony orchestra. One can think of a collection of instruments, right? And you can go ahead and assemble them randomly, and you can have 80 people playing 20 different instruments distributed randomly, and they're all playing whatever music they want. And you say, okay, you know, I'm going to hit the gong, start playing. And it sounds like a horrible cacophony. It sounds like noise. It's not pleasing to the ear. It's a mess. So then You say, okay, well, wait a minute. You got all these instruments. Everybody's playing their own part. Let's fix this. Let's at least, you know, find somebody who can go ahead and orchestrate, right, so that everybody is playing a part that can harmonize and complement every other part. So that's very good. And then let me take all the violins and let me put them over here, and I'll put the French horns over there, and I'll go easy on the trumpets because they're very loud, and I'll put, you know, the other wind instruments, and the timpani will be in the back, and then with all of that, I'll get a conductor, and we'll practice, and we'll work it out, and then we'll play together, and then all of a sudden what you have, not all of a sudden, but after hard work, you have a beautiful symphony. So we have all these different needs, all these different instruments, all these different capabilities, all these different responsibilities that comprise what we call life. And there's an orchestrator, there's a conductor, and there's a script, and I guess the script can be the Torah, the conductor is the Rabbona Shel Olam. And what I'm suggesting is maybe something very simplistic, and that is the very circumstance of balancing all these conflicting but legitimate needs, and the very circumstance of working these priorities is in itself a very important avoda. It is part of serving God. It is, in some sense, the essence of working to serve God, to be able to address all of these issues. And to the extent that we can bring the Rabbona Shel Olam and bring the Torah into that process, alleviates and can alleviate a great deal of stress. First of all, in terms of paying attention to halacha, what the responsibilities are, it provides guidance, it can provide some challenges, but also supplies support. But the other thing is that that's very important, is that in any organization and any collection of different component parts, if there's something that transcends all of those parts, then that transcendental being can create a unification and a balance. So what I'm suggesting is that it's very important to bring Hashem into this conversation, both in terms of our tefillah, both in terms of our introspective processes. We said, you know, it says in Sefer Shmos, in Parsha Shmos, when the Rabbona Shel Olam is talking to Moshe Rabbeinu, Shal na lecha, take off your shoes, right? Hamakom asher amid alav ad miskodeshi, the ground upon which you're standing is holy ground. The Chafetz Chaim talks about this, and he says that this is really a paradigm for all of us. We're all standing on ground, the makom. We're all standing in a place that how we use that ground and what we do with it can turn it into something very holy. And therefore, these issues are meaningful. So even though we may feel torn, and even though we may feel conflicted, and even though sometimes we may feel inadequate and not up to the challenge, the struggle is something that is intrinsically meaningful and beautiful and sacred, and is something that is valued and precious to Hashem. And that's very important to realize that. Okay. Now, I have my little marker here. And I'm going to, again, it's going to be a little bit focused. I don't know everybody's situation. It's a very general talk. I have to necessarily extrapolate from my own and talk about what works, what doesn't work. But we have all of these different responsibilities that I had talked about. At the center, I guess I'll just start it like this. And this is strategy number one. So at the center is you, me, right? Us, we. I don't know how to describe this. You? Okay, you. I mean, I'm in this too, so I'm included in the you, okay? And then coming off of the you are all of these different things that we talked about.
all these different responsibilities, the communal responsibility, the individual growth. We have a spouse over here, right? And we have children over here, and we have parents over here, and we have jobs over here, and so on and so forth. Okay, so that's where we are, and all of these things are pulling us in different directions. So here comes strategy number one, okay? This is something that everybody hears at Sheva Brachas, and it's true 32 years later, right? You pull your spouse into the you, right? It has to have, you have to have your spouse in here, and the you becomes a we, okay? And that is the most important thing, because the marriage, really, first of all, is there's nothing as miserable, very few things as miserable as Rahman al-Itzlan, when spouses are fighting, everything becomes paralyzed, and all these other responsibilities become compromised, just from a very practical point of view. Just can't function as well and assume those responsibilities. So from a purely practical Machiavellian, you know, approach to all of this stuff, you need your spouse. But the other reason that you need your spouse is it gets a little bit more complicated and a little bit more subtle. So let's talk now as we move to children. So children are sort of a more straightforward application, if you will, of why it's so important to have your spouse there. An easier application, why? Because if we talk about, and there's different kinds of families, but let's start with, the traditional family, where spouses, husband and wife, with the partnership of the Ribbono Shel Olam, bring children into this world. So therefore, the children are intrinsically, if you will, part of both spouses. So therefore, both spouses go ahead and have an interest in working with their children. They share their children. The children is something that's shared, brings them together. It's something that's very special. Now, in situations where you have blended families, and you have people who are now, you know, involved in second marriages and so forth, then the children become something that it's a little bit more complicated, because you have a child of one spouse and the children of another spouse, and you have to go ahead and work out how those spouses deal with each other's children and their own children. And that becomes another sandwich issue, another, but even in that issue, or maybe especially in that issue, the most critical paradigm is that the spouses have a close relationship, a trusting relationship, and a relationship that's characterized by communication as well as understanding. And now, that's children. Parents are a little more complicated than children, because the spouse, husband and wife, did not create their parents, right? It worked the other way. So now, parents belong, if you will, to one or other of the spouses. So you have two sets of parents. You have parent set number one and parent set number two. And therefore, this can become something that can create conflict. It can create conflict in terms of allocation of time and resources, and it can create conflict here. So the most important thing above all of these things in any strategy is to resolve the conflict here. Sometimes resolving the conflict here means that both of the spouses have to say, yes, my parent is slightly eccentric and can be very annoying, and I really understand that, and therefore I'm very appreciative of the fact that you are supportive of this relationship, or vice versa. There's understanding, there's communication, there's acknowledgement of the difficulty involved in negotiating these things. But this is extremely important at all stages of the sandwich development, because what also has to happen here is that each spouse allows the other to be able to attend to needs of their respective parents. That's very, very important. So there has to be a bedrock of love, of trust, of quality time spent, so that nobody feels cheated and hurt, to allow the accommodation of these relationships. Okay, now, moving along. So the most important thing is that the spouse has to come into that circle, and all of these things have to be done together as a partnership. Okay. The second thing that I think I want to say is the nature of the sandwich as it progresses through time. So initially, right, people, let's say they get married and they're a younger couple and they have parents. And then they may have children. And so then there's questions that have to be discussed. How often do the parents come and visit us? How long do the parents stay when they visit us? How often do we visit the parents? Where do we spend Pesach? Where do we spend Sukkot? How do we go ahead and deal with this? How are we going to deal with our parents in terms of their relationship with our children? You know, how do we feel about, you know, your father disciplining our son, right? Or how do we feel about, you know, your mother coming into the kitchen and deciding to go ahead and make, you know, this particular issue? I still remember when I was a kid, which was a long, long time ago, even with a, I remember seeing a commercial, I don't know, it was an aspirin commercial or something, and it was a woman whose mother came into the kitchen to try and help, and the commercial began with, "Mother, please, I'd rather do it myself." That was a, I don't know if anybody remembers that. Yes, they do. You remember that commercial. It was, "Mother, please, I'd rather do it myself." And the mother was crushed, right? And then, of course, the daughter who said that was crushed that she said it. And then the announcer, "Hey, this could all have been solved by Anderson," you know, or whatever. You know, you wouldn't have had this problem. So there are always issues with dealing with parents. There are issues with an adult dealing with their own parent, who still wants to feel useful and still wants to feel that they can add value to their children's lives, because that has been their role. And so this is important in a sandwich generation, because there's another mechanism here. I don't need to go in like a stream of consciousness here, but okay, so now here's the children, right? And here are the parents. And now, our parents are going ahead and they're trying to be parents to us because they're trying to find meaning in their life, right? And trying to help us in areas that we may not want to be helped. And therefore, there could be conflict here. There could be visitation. There could be areas of space. You're trying to go ahead and build your home, build a life together. You're trying to create that bubble of we. And sometimes parents can feel like an intrusion, and you're dealing and negotiating with all of that. Well, guess what? Right? Time goes on. There's going to be a new sandwich generation, and you're moving up here. Right? You're the parents, and your children are married. And now you are going to be aware of, well, how often do we visit? And how long do we stay? And how much advice do I give? And what do I do about the fact that my grandson just took a piece of cake and shoved it in my forehead, right? How do I deal with that, right? How do I go ahead and handle that discipline, for example, right? These are all highly speculative examples. But the question is here is that we're still learning. If we're here and we're dealing with our parents and we're seeing what we like and what we don't like, right? Even as we grow in life as children, you know, nobody's perfect. Parents aren't perfect, right? There are things that our parents did that we didn't like. We wish that they had done things differently, right? We wish they had been less strict. We wish that they had been more strict. We wish, whatever the issues may have been, we're always learning from them how the good things and how to apply it to our children. And we're learning the losas says of what not to do to our children. And so as we go through life over here, we're still learning. Okay, you know, it was a little bit much when our parents stayed, you know, for 6 weeks, you know, it was very difficult. So you know what? When we go ahead and stay with our kids, you know, we're not going to stay for 6 weeks. We're only going to stay, you know, 4 days. Four weeks. Oh, 4 weeks. Okay, 4 weeks. I wasn't sure. 4 days. 3 days. Okay. But this is, I think, a very, very important point. And so there's so much to be learned at every step of the relationship, provided that you say, okay, I'm still learning from my parents. And the other part of it, too, is that if you can go ahead and say, you know, still solicit advice from parents when you're a young couple, that the parents do feel meaningful. I have a question for you. I'm thinking of doing this. I'm thinking of doing that. What could make a father, a mother more happy than an adult child coming to them and asking for their wisdom? Say, okay, I can't take care of you anymore. You can run faster than I can. You can jump faster than I can. You can do arithmetic faster than I can. You can do so. But you know something? You still value my input. And it feels so good, because this is what we want from our children, to value our input. So doesn't it make sense that when we come to our parents, that we can value their input as well? Lessons learned both ways. Transfer of information. We can learn going up how to deal with our parents. We can learn from our parents how to deal with our children. Okay, now I'm going to get to a harder part, and I'm sort of going to jump and fast forward because the sandwich changes through time, right, as I mentioned. So here we're talking about a young couple with kids, with parents who are functional, who can get on a plane, who can come and visit, who can go and stay, who have their own lives, who are basically okay. And now what happens is, let's move through time. And now the parents get older. Now the parents are not in a situation where you really can ask them for advice. Maybe they can, maybe they can't. But the parents are in a situation where there is decline. There's health decline, there's other issues that create a lot of difficulty. So how do we do it? So here's how you do it, I think. I'll put it this way. Here's how we do it, okay? And it's not easy. It's not a magic formula. So remember how we pulled the spouse in. So instead of the spouse being yet something else that pulled away, the spouse was at the core, right? And the core is something that's protected. Well, you remember that we also talked about parents one and parents two. And there are rules about parents one and parents two that always should be respected. If a parent has to be, quote unquote, assigned limits, right? You know, Mom, the last time you stayed for 6 weeks, it might be a better idea if you only stay for a month. Might be better if you only stay for 3 weeks, right? That's got to come from the birth child of that parent. That should not come from the in-law. No matter what kind of relationship and how nice that relationship is, you don't cross that line, right? There are other lines that have to be, and certain protocols that always have to be observed. But at some point, for all of those protocols and all of the halakhas that we have to remember in terms of drawing those lines, we also have to retry and do something else. That the parents also become a unit. That just like when you get married, right, it's not that your father-in-law may have been Fred, right, when you were a single guy and you were davening in the same shul, and you say, hey, Fred. Right, but if Fred becomes one's father-in-law, Fred's not Fred anymore. Fred is dad. Fred is tati. Fred is pop. Right? And Ethel, you know, to go back to I Love Lucy, right? Ethel is not Ethel anymore. Ethel is mom. And it's mom and dad. And that's how they're referred to in all conversations. Conversations with each spouse, conversations with mom and dad, conversations to anybody, mom and dad. Sometimes if people will go ahead outside, the family will refer to my father-in-law You know, I won't call him dad. Sometimes I will, depending on, you know, who I'm talking to. I'll refer to him by his name. But you know, Dr. Novice. But he's dad. He's mom. And my mother is ma. Right? And that's it. Inviolate. The other thing that happens is that as the parents become one unit, and the fact that they're both living in so close proximity, my in-laws live, and they're still, Baruch Hashem, able to live in their own home, which is about 300 steps away from our home. I have a step counter. I try and get to 10,000 steps a day, so that's why I know how many steps it is. 300 steps. My mother lives in an assisted living facility. It's a bracha right around the corner from me, which is owned by my mechutenister. And so she lives, you know, it's really a 5-minute walk. We both have and share the responsibilities for the care of our collective parents. So my wife, my work schedule is such that I can't get back to visit my mother. I would love to visit her every single day. She can't stay up till 8 o'clock at night. She can't wake up before 9 o'clock in the morning, right? So I don't see her because I'm working all day. On the weekends I see her. My wife goes and visits her. My wife goes and visits her every day. Her father is somebody, my dad is davens at shul. I drive him home every day from shul. I help him get ready for Shabbos. And we have a relationship that is a very, very close and personal relationship. When my wife has to go ahead, recently my mother-in-law was really, she's like a rock and sharp as a tack. But she recently had some medical problems and the wheels came off the bus because she wasn't able to take care of my father-in-law. So my wife had to step up. And for me, it was a tremendous act of giving to let go of my wife and care for our mutual family. We have our parents over every Shabbos. They're part of our lives. And that's it's a collective relationship, and that I think is very important. I want to go ahead and just sort of sum up with something else that is, I guess it's very difficult as our parents move on to the twilight of their lives. I read an interesting book by Atul Gawande. I don't know if anybody ever heard of him. He's a physician he's a professor at Harvard Medical School, but he's gotten very interested in sort of the social aspects of medicine. And he studied the issue. He wrote a book called Being Mortal. And it's a book about getting old. And he asked the question, and here's the first premise. At the center of Wilson's work, and this was a woman who pioneered, one of the pioneers of assisted living, was an attempt to solve a deceptively simple puzzle. What makes life worth living when we are old and frail and unable to care for ourselves? That's the question. What makes life worth living when we're old and unable to care for ourselves? So I want to introduce one more concept here. And then we're in the home stretch. It's a psychologist who several decades ago, his name was Abraham Maslow, and he wrote a pyramid of basic needs in life. Okay, and his pyramid goes like this. He says, down here at the bottom, you have basic necessities. You have food, you have air, you have security, you have shelter. These are basic necessities, right down here. Then over here is love, basic necessities. Over here is professional achievement, right? And then over here is selfless actions motivated by idealism. You save Western civilization, right, for example. Or you do something great. Right? So this is his pyramid. And so the argument was that in sort of modern healthcare, in dealing with old people, everybody is focused on this. You know, what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and provide shelter and food and air, and then they're going to be okay because this is the most important thing, right? And when you get older, the other stuff, you know. So there's a couple of mistakes with this, I think, and certainly from a Torah perspective, I'll talk about this. But the fact of the matter is that these things change as people get older, and needs change as people get older. For example, there's an interesting study when you're 25 years old and you know you're a young careerist and you're moving up in the world, would you rather go ahead and spend time with your family, or would you rather go ahead and be networking at a critically important professional conference? A lot of people would prefer to be networking at a very, very important professional conference, not spend time. When you get older, and you get, for various reasons, what becomes more important is the nature of these relationships and the nature of family and being close to someone. Someone in Dr. Gawande came to the conclusion based upon some other research. The reason is because when you get older, you get more confronted with your mortality, and therefore your priorities change by virtue of the fact that you're aware of the limit, you're aware of the end. And therefore what happens is love and so forth takes primacy. And that's as important, if not more important, than all these other basic needs. From a Torah perspective, this is really artificial. Because from a Torah perspective, really, a person, remember I began by saying the ground upon which you stand is hallowed. We know, you've heard drusha after drusha. You know, when Shabbos comes, and you eat your challah, it's a big mitzvah. You're eating challah. You're doing this quote-unquote mundane activity, baking challah, preparing a Shabbos meal, eating the meal, right? All of those things become imbued with kedusha. Everything that we do becomes imbued with kedusha. And therefore, saving Western civilization and this highest paradigm of idealistic behavior can be something as basic as providing for someone's needs, right? Your gashmius is my ruchnius. If I take care of your gashmius, that's my spirituality. So it speaks to a very, very important issue. And it's a conversation that I had yesterday with my wife. And I think it's such an important conversation. She said, okay, you know, I love to, Shabbos, my wife goes ahead and walks my father-in-law to Shul. We live about a half a mile from Shul. He has a walker. He takes his time. It takes him a long time to walk to Shul. My wife goes ahead, and on Shabbos morning, I am there early. I have a little shear. My wife goes ahead, walks him to Shul, comes back, right? And then takes care of her mother, and then goes to Shul to hear my drasha. So I'm very, very appreciative of. She gets a lot of exercise, so that's. But I asked the question. She said to me, she said, "I love spending time with my father. It's so nice that I get to spend, you know, a half hour or so walking with my father." I asked. I said, "So okay, you know, and I know Dad very well." I said, "Why? What does he say? Well, he doesn't talk too much." So I said, "Okay, so what is it then?" He said, "Nothing more than being with him." And so I think that going back to the sandwich and going ahead and learning from our parents and learning about ourselves and learning about life, that we also make the transition. That as we begin to approach at least and see mortality from the vantage point of our parents and seeing where they are, seeing what matters to them. What matters to them is not a fancy conversation.
is not a discussion of politics or a discussion of a sugya, a shnayim oksin betalis. What matters to them can be simply an act of just being with them. This becomes an act of tremendous giving, tremendous chesed, and becomes something that's mamish, standing on holy ground. But it also does something else. It teaches us something about what is most important in life and what is most fundamental in life. They say in the Toma Devora, which is a beautiful, beautiful sefer written by Reb Moshe Cutivero, he says that our mitzvah is halichas bedrachav, that a whole tachlis in life, the biggest pinnacle of spirituality, is to walk in the ways of Hashem. And yes, we're familiar, walking in the ways of Hashem is to visit the sick and to go to a chasana and to make a chasana and kala happy and to go to a levaya. Absolutely. Clothe the needy. Absolutely. But there's a deeper level of walking in the ways of Hashem. Hashem bears us. Hashem carries us. Hashem, even when we do things and we can no longer, we sometimes do things that aggravate Hashem, Hashem still comes to us and stays connected to us and nurtures us and sustains the relationship. So therefore, if all we have to do, you know, to do a tremendous act of chesed is to just be with somebody, and that's all that's required, just a person's presence is all that's required to give someone comfort, that is a tremendous mitzvah of halichas bedrachav. So anyway, I tried to give some insight into the nature of the sandwich generation to try and move from the idea of conflict and being torn asunder to trying to create something harmonious. And it all comes to unification. It means becoming one with your spouse and bringing her into the center. It means, of course, being one with the Ribbono Shel Olam, imbuing all of the other activities as being part of that relationship, as part of your relationship with Torah, bringing that into the center. And then it comes unification between parent one and parent two, bringing that into the center, learning from our parents, applying it to our children, learning from our children, applying it to our relationship with our parents. Thank you so much for your attention. Thank you.